outdoor space. This is Saundra Springer of Springer Ponds and Water Gardens. Adding an ecosystem pond, a waterfall, or delightful fountainscape would be the perfect recipe to create that place of zen. You can see our work at Logan's Garden Shop in downtown Raleigh, For Garden's Sake in Durham, and Briggs Restaurant in Wake Forest. Begin the process to your perfect outdoor space today by going to springerponds.com or calling 919-818-0290. That's 919-818-0290.
Everybody awake! Good morning!
Good morning! Good morning! Good morning! Good morning! Good morning! Good morning! Good morning! Good morning! Good morning!
Of a whole with different feelings to evoke, giving distinction to the role, different players, different strokes.
But let me tell you about one thing I know: everybody's got a seed to sow. Let your heart of hearts take you down the road. Everybody's got a seed to sow.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the WPTF Weekend Gardener. Mike Rayleigh here. Hope you're well today. A little rainy out there, my goodness. But it's been a little dry to some extent, so I hope that that's going to be going to work out well for us. A lot of people have planted a little fall, not fall, but spring grass, some fescue to kind of tide them over for a while. It's probably not going to take, is it, Mark Bumgardner?
No, it's not.
You mean I can't plant any clover?
Well, you can. Of course you can. Go for it.
Well, you got to try.
That's
I suppose
right. There are different, and it depends on where you're looking. Clover, you can plant in the spring.
Everybody can't have warm season grass, unfortunately. If we could, I would have it. And Brother Rufus, how are you today, sir?
I'm very well. I even walked around the yard this morning in the rain and started singing in the rain. And birds started chirping, and it seemed like everything's popping up, the daffodils, the jonquils, the crocus, hyacinths, Daphne's still not dead.
No, mine's been blooming for a while. I noticed yesterday that the fragrant osmanthus was blooming like crazy.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And that's normally something you see in the fall, but I guess we've gotten so warm around here year-round that it's just blooming several times a year.
Mike, I get at least two blooms a year.
I get more than that. I'm sure I do.
I get three.
Yeah, which is great. It's a great value, isn't it? I mean, no disease problems that I know of, and it makes if you want a blind, as they say down in my country, plant a long hedge that you don't trim, then that's certainly a great candidate. It's not going to grow as fast as some things, but wow.
Now, that is one thing that we talk about interspersing. If you're going to build a blind, as you call it, having different things.
Yeah, there are a lot of different things you can plant.
I recommend, though, if you're going to do really want a fine hedge.
A monoculture.
Use all osmanthus.
Just for the fragrance.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it is reliable, but you know, I don't know of Mark. Do you know of any disease that you've heard that affects?
I really don't. No,
that affect the osmanthus.
Well, I'm sure there's some root rots, of course.
Yeah,
but
there
no
is for
fungus?
Any plant that you plant in wet areas or
exactly.
You know, Most plants don't like wet feet. So,
good drainage. And you know, things like Phytophthora, it's what they call the disease triangle. So they got to have the environment, the host, the time, and the temperature.
Well, that's what apparently what Daphne likes is is Phytophthora root rot, because I think that's essentially what kills them.
Yeah.
So, and boxwoods. I remember Irv Evans used to talking about boxwoods.
Oh my gosh, boxwoods! go away from boxwoods. Let's.
That was, you know, when I was growing up, there were not a lot of things available to plant.
Yeah, that's right.
There were camellias and
azaleas
and ligustrum. That's what they use for hedges in Nashville. Mr. Cooley, John Sestair, he was a Ford dealer across the street there. Yes, the Chevrolet Buick and the Ford guy lived across the street from each other. But they both had ligustrum hedges, and there were others in town who had that. So that was kind of the go-to thing. But other than that, I mean, you know, there were daffodils and pansies.
Forsythia. A few tulips.
Everybody had a little forsythia.
Yeah, I don't remember forsythia.
Oh, yeah. Forsythia were big time. Yeah. Here in my grandmother had this row of forsythia.
Oh, yes.
I'm talking about massive, massive rows.
Now, it will spread. You can divide it many times.
A little forsythia goes a long way, right?
Please don't trim it like a hedge. Don't make that into a hedge because it is deciduous for one thing, but also it likes to flow. It likes to flop and flow. And
it reaches to the heavens.
Yeah.
And I guess you've already talked about the temperature that forsythia kind of blooms in, right? The soil temperatures?
Well, I don't know that we've talked about it. I know that crabgrass and forsythia are blooming at the same time. Yeah.
Well, they come hand in hand because the soil temperatures hit about 55 degrees, and that's when they bloom.
Oh, 55? Yeah, that low?
Yeah, 55 degrees is when when you see forsythia, you need to get your pre-emergence down because that's kind of an indicator plant that says, hey, I'm about to sprout.
Yeah, and that's the first dose. You got to wait about 3 months or so, four months.
We tell people, hey, if you start seeing the first bloom, you if you haven't got it down, you're almost too late.
Right. So get out there and check every morning. I mean, of course, some of them have bloomed out now. Mine is, my forsythia is still blooming.
Yep. And I think this year was kind of an anomaly. Well, I won't say it's anomaly. With our climate, we had no snow this year. Can you believe that?
I know.
Zero snow.
I know. I think didn't we see a few flakes somewhere someday? I think maybe in December. It seemed like there were some flakes that if you were up early enough or maybe it was at night. I don't know. But I do remember some reference to that.
Right.
Well, it's terrible.
Heard something on the radio this past week. They were saying that this is the first year in the last 3 years that we've had no snow, no measurable snow.
Yeah.
So,
which is fine with me to a certain extent because I don't like to drive in it. I've never liked driving in it, but I've had to. I mean, there's some really bad stuff.
You gotta talk about us in the South. We can't drive in the snow.
I can drive in the snow just as well as somebody in Connecticut, but I don't think they want to drive through it any more than I mean, I can.
Well, it's about experience, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I've had almost 50 years experience, but it's still something that I don't like to do. It seems, I mean, it's stupid.
But listen, I got a four-wheel drive truck, and I think I can drive in just about anything.
Well, for most of my life, I've had front-wheel drive, and I've done very nicely with it, but all-wheel drive gives you some...
Yeah. Well, and my point is that me being a little, you know, your farm redneck, I like to get out there and see what I can do. And
yeah, but you're going to kill somebody.
Well, that's a problem. I go to the parking lots.
Okay, well, that's fine. That's fine if you go to that, but a lot of people don't.
That's right.
Well, and if you guys were born up there in the mountains where I was, it snows a good deal, and even with climate change, it does continue to snow. And I've always been amazed down here how crazy people seem to me.
I know. They don't drive correctly.
They go nuts.
Drive too fast.
But
they had wrecks in the mountains too, didn't they? There was always some fool that would try to pass.
We just put chains on. Boy.
Oh yeah, I remember that. I haven't seen a snow chain in years now.
Yeah, who wants to get out and put a chain on a tire?
That's a hard thing to do.
It's ridiculous.
It is. That's right. You remember how to do that?
Oh, I can barely. Yeah.
Well, drive to work at 4 o'clock in the morning too. That's of course not a lot of. It's safer to a certain extent, but you know it's still no fun. So the point again is that I don't enjoy it.
Yeah,
driving in snow to get to work.
So Rufus got a question about chains. A front wheel drive car. You put the chain on the front or the back?
You put it on the front because that's the driving wheels.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
But in actuality, if you got a four wheel drive, you put it on the front or the back.
Well, I think
four wheel drives are start out as rear wheel drive, so you put it on the rear.
Okay, but if you think about it, your steering is in the front, so where do you really need the chains?
But you have a differential.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know anybody that had a pickup truck or a truck back then that had four-wheel drive.
Yeah, that was that was very rare. I don't know when that came into that. Yeah, that's right. Jeep probably – did Jeep invent that? I guess they did.
Yeah,
that's right. Back in – the 40s.
Because I'm certainly II. During World War II that it certainly worked out.
Yeah.
Now, talk about hard to put chains on a truck, big old truck wheel. I can remember my grandpa, he let out some expletives.
I'm sure he did. Anybody would putting on chains.
Skinned his knuckles.
Yeah.
But you had to do that if you wanted to get around up there in so many times.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. 919-860-9783, 919-860-WPTF. You're listening to The Weekend Gardener on this rainy day. So if you're just waking up, it's raining a little bit out there. So cool. It was, when I was driving in, it was 49 degrees. And so it's a nice morning to kind of lie in bed and listen to The Weekend Gardener, maybe get up and eat a little breakfast, drink some hot coffee.
Well, I have a good report on one of our sponsors, I Must Garden, a friend of mine, Rusty Magnum, who's a avid listener. I had recommended his dog loved to dig up anything he would plant. And I had given Rusty a rose of Sharon. And he said, I can't keep it in the ground with that dog of mine. I said, well, why don't you try some I Must Garden product? And he says, it's worked.
Did he try the animal repellent, or do you know?
Well, he said he wouldn't ask for something for dogs,
uh-huh.
And that would be the animal repellent.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think I saw one that specifically says just for dogs. So we got a good report, and nice listeners.
Well, thank you very much, Rufus, for segueing into a commercial for I Must Garden.
Oh, my goodness.
I think Marilyn would appreciate that.
Oh, my goodness.
This was not set up, Marilyn.
No,
So he's a proud owner of a bag or two or three of
right.
I Must Garden products.
Well, yes.
That's good. And his dog, is his dog mad with him, or do we know?
We haven't gotten into that yet.
Okay. Well, we'll get into the psychological part of this and the relationship between dog and man.
Well,
and
the psychology is what made that dog want to dig up everything in the world.
Well, dogs just want to dig.
Yeah.
Some children do, too.
Well, I'll tell you, I went out and looked at our yard yesterday, and my wife said, hey, we got guests coming over, and so I need you to do a few things.
To stop digging.
Yeah. Well, my dog has dug up. We had moles, and we had some tunnels, and we have two dogs. And
did they find any?
Well, she certainly has found something. There's no moles there now. I can guarantee.
Yeah.
Because our yard has got potholes. Oh my God!
It's aerated.
That's right.
Is.
That's right. I don't worry about moles. It's voles. I don't like. So if like so many, you know, spring is in the air except for this morning. although I hear the birds were singing this morning. I must garden is something that you certainly need, and spring is also the time when you have to deal with all those pests we have in the triangle, like digging dogs. Taking preventative measures early in the season is a wise approach, and now is the time to start protecting your garden with I Must Garden. I Must Garden has repellents to protect your plants from deer and rabbits, and rid the moles and voles from your lawn, so stop squirrels from digging in flower pots, and maybe repel snakes and dogs and cats, especially your neighbors' dogs and cats. You know, I Must Garden repels a lot of things, and the formulated repellent has natural ingredients, which is very important, carefully selected to deter pests without harming your plants or the environment. No harsh chemicals, just pure, effective protection. Applying I Must Garden repellents is a breeze. Simply spray, protect, and watch your garden flourish. And there's also a granular version of a lot of them, too. Plus, long-lasting formulas mean fewer applications, saving you time and ensuring continuous protection. I Must Garden repellents are available at local garden centers like Campbell Road Nursery in Raleigh, Westlake Ace Hardware Stores, and there are a couple of new ones around. Protect your garden today with I Must Garden repellents. People, pet, and eco-friendly. I Must Garden, your ultimate defense against garden pests.
Well, you added people in there. You need to do a little bit to keep some people away.
People, I don't know. if somebody comes into your yard and starts digging, I think probably if you would just spray them with some I Must Garden, right, I think they would run away.
Yeah.
That's the only way I know it. If somebody comes into your garden and starts, of course, if I saw Mart come out the door,
watch out,
and I was digging in your in his garden, I think I would. That would be my deterrent. All right, more of the Weekend Gardener coming up here on WPTF is 8:21. Well, the Pope Brothers and the Tams, why not a little beach music on a rainy day?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Big John would love that, wouldn't he?
Big John would certainly love that. A lot of good beach music. So we'll kind of stay on a beach music theme.
Well, the Platters are my favorite.
You like the Platters? I actually saw them at the Embers Club at Atlantic Beach in the late 60s.
Yeah.
So I don't know how many original members were missing, but...
Right.
By then.
The Great Pretender.
Yeah. But they were very good, as I recall.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm fortunate. I saw a lot of great groups at the Embers Club in the 60s. Junior Walker and the All-Stars. A lot of things. A lot of groups there. So happy about that. Happy to have all of you with us. Happy to have Martin Rufus here. Hope you are well. If you... step out of the bed this morning. It's fairly chilly out there, about 49 degrees and rain, but the rain is good. A lot of people have seeded, fertilized, done a lot of things like that. I've noticed that walking by a neighbor who has just put down some sod, I believe probably zoysia sod, and you can tell that a little bit of green is coming through.
Starting
in it.
To spike.
Yeah. So... That's going to look really good.
Well, you know, you were asking about clover and
oh, the clover! I saw some clover. It's just going crazy, Rufus.
Oh yeah.
And I was just looking it up, and it says, you know, now's the time to plant it right now. It says wait till after a good rain and you know 60-degree temperature, and so now is a perfect time to plant your clover.
Well, tomorrow they will be then.
Yeah. Get it out there. Get it out
now,
there.
The seeds are so tiny.
I know. Oh,
I've got
gosh.
One of those little dispersers, though. You set the amount that goes out. I found that's the best way to do it.
Kind of like centipede seed, or is it smaller?
It's even smaller.
Oh, my gosh.
It's super, super small.
Yeah, it seemed like Gerald was talking about distributing that with some
sand.
Other sand.
Yeah.
Like a playground sand or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, really equally, you know, size sand. You know, you don't want to just go to...
Yeah, I guess it wouldn't be playground.
Well, it could be, yeah. As long as it's, you know, it's all, it's an aggregate, it's all pretty much the same size.
Yeah.
You just don't want to have big chunks and little chunks of sand.
Yeah.
Mix it up really good. That's how these plant tobacco is. They use sand to mix it up and
right.
spread that out.
Yeah. So what do you use to distribute it? Another person or?
a landscaper.
a little gadget that I got at one of our sponsors. I think it was Logan's. And you put it in the hopper. You set your degree of how much you want.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you just turn a little.
Oh, okay. So it's the hand thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a good idea.
Now, my daddy was so good at sowing seed. We never had anything like that. But he would sow maybe 5 acres at a time of Timothy hay with this sack thing over his
over his
back. And he had the most beautiful hand motion, and it would come up evenly. I never could figure it out.
Oh.
But he would do 5 acres in a day.
That's a real skill.
By hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we have news coming up here on WPTF from CBS, and then John Champion on the WPTF Weekend Gardener. Jackie Gore and the Beatles. They were the Beatles to me back in the 60s. I thought the Embers were as big as the Beatles. So, yeah, and they still are to me.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and great lead singers.
They put on a good Christmas show this year.
Of course they did.
Yeah.
That little Washington boy can sing.
Oh, man.
So, love the Embers. Love beach music. So, we're kind of staying with that theme this morning, and maybe that'll wake you up. I tell you, did you want to get out of bed this morning, Rufus? Of course, you don't ever want to get out of bed at 6 o'clock. Is that when you get up?
Well, I was wide awake at 15 to 6.
Oh, okay. Well,
so
that's good.
As I said, took a little walk around the yard.
If you're wide awake, get up.
Yeah.
Don't waste a day. I feel like we're running out of time.
Nah,
I feel like I'm running out of time, so I get up.
Now, I will take a little nap this afternoon.
I might do that today.
Isn't that fun? I mean, when you have a really cold, wet day like today.
It is.
Yeah.
Just to cuddle up next to the fire, and if you have one.
Yeah.
Or just to cuddle
up. I know you have a fire. You're a prescribed burner. You got fires all over the place.
Oh, we burned about 21 acres from the last time.
And people wanted you to.
Oh, absolutely. And we're hoping to burn another 8 acres and another acre and a half. So, I mean, this week.
This is a consortium.
Yes, it's a burn association, prescribed burn association, and we're landowners want to use fire in the environment, and there's so many positive aspects of using fire. Number one.
Correctly.
Yes, correctly.
No wildfires in this group. Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what you're doing, is we're actually reducing the potential for wildfire.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I told you the last time I was here that North Carolina was third in the nation in 2022. For the number of wildfires we had, and it was outnumbered by California and Texas. And Texas, oh my gosh, they're having a tough time now. I mean, they're, you know, the wildfires they've got going on. So I mean, they're out of control. So by having a prescribed burn, you're actually reducing that fuel loads on the floors of the forest,
mm-hmm.
and so that it reduces wildfire, and then it also increases wildlife habitat. When was the last time you saw a quail?
I don't know that 30, I have.
30 years ago in my yard.
Exactly.
Have you been quail hunting, Rufus?
I'm
sure you haven't been quail hunting.
There's none left.
Well, if we use fire, bring fire back, it'll bring the quail back. I'm telling you it will.
Hmm.
Because they've got to have a clean runs, and so you burn the land, and they have plenty of space to run, and you know it frees up the environment. It gets rid of invasives. It gets rid of these pests like ticks and chiggers and stuff like that. I mean, there's so many.
I'm all for that.
And then these invasives. Oh my gosh! And it opens the understory. So if you've seen a fire, where a fire has been, it's absolutely impressive. And so I'm gonna show you some pictures here.
Well, how do people get in touch with you if they're interested in this?
All you have to do is go to Orange County website, Orange County Extension website, and then on the left column there's a red banner, and just go down to Prescribe Burn, and there's a form. It's a Google form, so you just put your name and phone number in there and email address, and then we'll contact you. We'll add you to our Google group, and it's $12 a year is what we're charging as a fee for the membership, and we use that to buy the fuel to light the fire.
My goodness. Well, now, what, Mark, when you have a burn,
yep,
what kind of personnel do you take along to make sure it doesn't get out of control?
Well, that's a real good question, and it's those people that are in the group. We put out a kind of like a net call and say, hey, you know, we're going to burn on this day, and if you can show up, please come. And we show up about an hour before the burn, and we do a briefing, you know, to explain what we're doing and what our objectives are, and It is phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. We had about 30 people to burn that 18 or 19 acres. And they came out at different times, and we have people that hold, they're called the holders. They hold the line, that stay on the outside and just watch it burn. And just if the fire starts to creep outside the burn unit, they just step it out. But we burn it a backing fire that burns into the wind, and then we use other burning techniques, you know, flanking fire, spots, lines, strips, just to increase the heat or reduce the heat, just to make sure that the fire is doing what we want it to do.
Do you have a fire truck out there just in case?
No. No, we don't.
All right.
You know what I had? I had a backpack sprayer, you know, what you'd use for chemicals.
Right.
We had about three or four of those. Didn't need a fire truck, but we had them. They knew we were burning.
Yeah.
And from the Forestry Service, and you know, we always give them a heads up and say, hey, we're going to do this. And the time we ignite, we call the Forestry Service and say, hey, you've got our burn plan. We're igniting now. And then as soon as they're done, we call them and say, hey, we finished. We also let the 911 center know that we're getting ready to burn.
Mm-hmm.
And and then we tell them when we're done. And so if they get calls, you know, they say, hey, it's okay, it's a prescribed burn, and all is good.
Very good. So there are a lot of things blooming out there, and I guess this prescribed burn will help things
absolutely
bloom in
yes,
the future. But Laura Pedlam is blooming like crazy.
Yes, it is.
And I'll tell you the thing that, I mean, it's pretty. They're pretty, those pear trees. They're blooming all over the place.
And the escapes. You can look out in the forest and see them, you know, for miles.
State of South Carolina is banning the sale or planting of Bradford pears as, I guess, as of October this year, maybe. Sometime this year, they're going to do that. Yeah. I know that NC State and some other Forestry Service and have put out a bounty.
Yeah, oh,
they've
absolutely
offered money for people to dig up Bradford pears or get rid of them.
A replacement tree.
Yeah, and so that's. But they are. I am told that they're considered invasive. That they can, you know, displace trees that birds get fruit from or you know, sustenance. But at any rate, I don't know. Don't plant a Bradford pear if you can even find one. I don't know that you can find one.
I don't know that you can either.
I don't know what the state of North Carolina has said about that. If there's even
now, wild
any legislation,
they're very prolific all over the woods I've looked at here recently.
Yeah, I haven't noticed wild cherries. They're certainly the pears, the white.
Yeah.
The pears. I think what you're seeing are pears.
Yeah, the escapes.
Yeah. I mean, they really are all over the place now. And we had Tony Avon on last week, and he was basically, he took the other slant. He said they're not invasive.
Right.
So, like a little controversy.
Yeah,
but at any rate,
on the Nandina. I have Nandina, Mark.
Yes.
I do, too.
And I like them.
I like them, too.
I've got Nandina as well, but I have the dwarfs, the short ones.
Yeah.
But I also have a couple of the large ones, and what I'm hearing is that the berries are poisonous to to birds.
Well,
but
we put that myth in the ground last week.
Yeah. Well, okay. But my point is that I've never seen my berries are still there.
Yeah, I don't know that most birds eat those.
Well, brown thrush, according to the article I read, and then we checked it with Tony, and he said it's so minuscule.
Yeah.
That the story that I read in Tony, according to Tony, there's a tiny bit of arsenic in the berries. Like
boy, there's arsenic in a lot of stuff.
Right.
And food too.
Yeah, so minuscule. And that's I remember we had a talk about that last time I was here as well. I think
it really worries you, doesn't it, Rufus? You feel like somebody's going to come out there and take your Nandina.
Well, there's some there that are they're over the tall ones, 12 feet tall. Over 50 years old.
So you've never trimmed them?
No.
Ann used to talk about trimming one stalk or whatever she called it a year. And one or two, and then next year cut another two.
Yeah,
so you don't give it a haircut. No. You don't give it a crew cut. You do it at different levels, different years. So
well, you've got colors.
If you like them.
And nothing else. I don't care what it is. There's got to be a day or two of the year that nothing is out there blooming, and you've got this beautiful, beautiful berry tree on
the Nandina. And that's why a lot of people like the dwarf ones, because there are some varieties that get just so bright red if they have enough sun.
Yeah. Yeah. And the foliage is
pretty.
So beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have never seen a berry on my dwarfs.
Yeah, I don't know that I have. We had a bunch of them at church, and I don't think I have, too. I've never noticed them.
I love the dwarfs. I mean, and another one, Mahonia.
I love Mahonias. Yeah. I really do.
And the beautiful yellow flowers of the Mahonia.
Yeah, and then the robins. I don't know if there are any other birds. The robins love the berries.
Is they're invasive too?
Yes, of course.
Well, they do. They do spread.
Right.
Yeah.
They do spread.
Yeah.
But you can. Boy, you really have to be careful when you pull those up or dig those up. They are sharp.
Wow.
They are sharp. It's not like a rose of Sharon or, the Lenten rose in getting rid of those. I mean, they seed out too. But
oh, man. Talk about the Lenten roses. Oh, man. You talk about
they have really looked good this year, Rufus.
They look phenomenal.
Really a pretty year for them. They have just bloomed like crazy.
I thought I'd never say this on this show. They've invaded my rock garden.
Invaded.
I'm going to have to dig some up, and I'll have.
Well, you've been doing that for years and giving them to friends.
When we go to the
farmer's market.
Farmer's market.
Yeah.
I've got to get it. I want one place they don't come. Otherwise, if they want to take over the entire place, they may do it.
But not your rock garden.
But not my rock garden.
Is that something sentimental?
Well,
or
yes, it is. That's where I have the roses. I have.
They don't mix really with the roses. I don't. Some people just don't like them. I know we had a grounds committee meeting this week, and some of the members don't like the Lenten roses. So we have an anti-Lenten rose faction on that committee.
Okay, I got a question. How do you split the cut leaf or the stinky hellebore? You know what I'm talking about? The ones that they're massive plants.
I didn't know we had a stinky hellebore.
Yeah, there's one. I think they call it a stinky hellebore.
Are you familiar?
I call it bear claw.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah.
Never heard you mention that, Rufus.
Right.
So
it doesn't look like a traditional hellebore.
Right, but it grows tall and it grows big. How do you split that guy?
I've never dug one up because they're so unique in my garden that I just let them go.
Well, you'll have to point one out next time I'm over there.
Like a hellebore.
Yeah, I don't think I have.
Oh, it does. Like the flower. That. If you look at the flower, it does.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's 3 feet tall?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, at least.
So what are y'all getting calls about? Are y'all getting calls about hellebore or Nandinas or what over there?
I got a call yesterday about a poplar tree. It was massive. I've never seen a tree so big. But my concern was not necessarily the poplar that I was looking at. I
had the one you showed us a photo of. Yeah, that thing's pretty well eaten up.
Yeah, but the one that I was really concerned about is you know, and it wasn't their concern, but it was mine. It was ash tree, and we've got this emerald ash borer that's going out killing all of our ash trees in North America. I mean, it's crazy. So, but we're getting, let me tell you about the bees. I need to tell you about the bees.
You have beehives there at the Orange County Extension Service.
No, I'm talking about underground bees.
Oh.
They are emerging. It looks like this gentleman called me yesterday and he said, hey, listen, I've got something that I don't know what it is. And I expected to see moles. Okay. And so, I went over to his house, and he had these mounds that looked like
fire ants. It's like there are millions of them.
Yes, it looked like fire ants.
Yeah.
I mean, fire ant mounds, but it was probably about 10 or, you know, 1,000 or so of these.
So they are bees.
They're a type of bees. It's a solitaire bee that's emerging. And so they're coming, they're digging their way out, and they're flying around, and they live in the ground.
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, please don't spray these because they are pollinators. They are phenomenal, and they are just emerging. People didn't know what they were.
Yeah.
And so I confirmed. I went over to another place, and I confirmed it last year what it was. And, yep, they are emerging. And then whenever I went out to the tree with the ash tree and the poplar, I saw these bees out in his yard. And I said, hey, look, this is bees. Don't mess with them.
Yeah.
Don't spray them. Don't kill them.
Yeah, we need
bees. They're pollinators. Holy moly! And most people, the first instinct is, I've got fire ants, so right. I'm going to go spray them. I'm going to kill them. Ugh. You know,
Looks nothing like fire ants.
Well, these mounds do. They look like fire ant mounds because they're coming out of the red clay, but they're
they aren't as big a mounds, are they?
They're small. I'll have to show you some pictures, but
no, I'm sure I've seen them there along my walking route. I haven't seen them lately. I don't know, maybe the people did something to.
Well, they have to have the habitat. They have to have kind of bare ground to be able to.
Yeah, that's exactly what this is, and it's right beside the street.
Yes,
and it's kind of on a right away of the city. Right away.
Yep. Well, I guarantee you that we'll have people that hear this radio talk about and say, oh, my God, that's what that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that if you look really close, you'll see insects kind of hovering around the top of the
mounds. Yeah, your fire ants are not going to be flying
that's
around
right.
like that. So,
that's right.
Yeah, be careful. Be careful.
So please don't spray
like
the bees.
Right. So, it's nesting season for birds, so our bluebirds need to find a safe place. And our friends at Wild Birds Unlimited in Cary and Raleigh have given us a beautiful bluebird nesting station with a pole and baffle to keep away other critters. So go to WPTF.com and find the contest tab and register to win it. Thanks to our friends at Wild Birds Unlimited. Hope you win. Let's take a call from Pamela in Durham. Pamela, how can we help you this morning?
Yes, how are y'all doing?
Fine. Hope you're well.
Yes, I am.
Good.
We have moss growing, like in our nature area. My husband tried to keep, you know, a nature area where you try to either keep pine needles or mulch. And then he was always trying to get rid of the moss and keep all that down. But now he just stopped doing it, and now the moss is all over the nature area, but it looks pretty. It looks good.
Yeah, some people really like moss, and there are books written about moss and how to preserve it. Very acidic soil you have there, and obviously compacted, and it's mm-hmm. probably not getting a lot of sun.
Soil, yeah.
Yeah, so I think you would find the opposite pH from a well-groomed grass,
but I mean,
area, turf area.
We like it though.
Yeah.
I mean,
so they're
green all the time, but it is kind of starting to go now, blowing into the yard.
Yeah. So that if it's growing into the yard, you have the same problem. You have compaction. You have high acidity in that soil. It needs lime. You need a soil test to start off with. And you may have usually you have a lot of root competition. You don't have sunlight. Mark, what do you want to add to that?
We don't have very much sunlight back there.
Okay. Yeah, you got all the ingredients for moss and very little for turf grass.
And I would also offer that if you really want to get rid of it, you can, but understanding if you get rid of it, you probably won't be able to get anything else to grow there.
Oh, God.
Unless you change the conditions, open up the area for sunlight, unless you have a soil test and have the right pH.
Yeah.
Right.
And add that organic matter you were talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what would you think if we just let it go and then we just had sort of a mixture of moss and grass in the backyard? Because, I mean, it looks green.
Well, it's going to take different opposite poles and different types of ways to take care of it. You really need to – I don't know that you need to decide. I mean, if they can coexist, I suppose, for a while, but I think the moss is probably going to take over if the pH is left the way it is. And you need to find an article somewhere or a book – I mean, there really are books written about
Moss and Annie. Yeah, that's a good one.
Well, so,
Pamela, I have moss all over my place. The house is 100 years old, 100-year-old pecan trees, and I love the moss, and they're coexisting areas. And in my opinion, the more moss, the better, because you don't see any weeds growing on moss.
But you need, if you want to keep moss, you've got to encourage it. You've got to make it even prettier.
Mine is creeping all up the roadway in the middle of the gravel road. It's so pretty, and it's such a green.
I know. And there are different kind of gray moss.
So maybe in my case, Pamela, I wouldn't let it worry me because you're going to have something there that you and your husband have come to enjoy. And you're going to have a lot of work doing it one way or another.
Yeah, it's going to be much less expensive to have that than to try to grow turf grass, especially the fescue, which is considered by turf specialists as temporary grass anyway.
Right, and that's what we have.
A lot of people do. So, I mean, the more trees you have and the less light, you're going to have more moss.
But one of the things...
I like what he said. Just let it go.
Yeah, let it go. But here's another point to help encourage the grasses. If you you could go in and aerate your soil, and then top dress it with compost. And so what you're going to do is actually get more organic matter into the soil. And you're going to leave compaction and. Eventually, grasses can you can overseed with more fescue grasses, but leave the moss there.
Yeah,
I mean if you can tolerate that, then leave the moss there.
But you really do have to go through a regimen of a lot of different things. And you can find that on. Hold on a second. We got to go for the news, Pamela. But thank you so much.
All right.
Bye.